This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4-point-something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast where we focus on a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in sunny Long Beach, California, joined by my good pal, Mr. Scott Fliegelman there in Boulder, Colorado. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Michael.
How you doing, bud?
Listeners.
Scott, I know it's a bit of a thrill for you to get to work with some of the listeners of the show who say, I want to go check out Boulder Pickleball and train with the man himself, Scott Fliegelman.
I'm hoping that every show I get to give a little shout out to our listeners who make the journey to Boulder Pickleball from afar. But Susanna from Chicago was on court for a lesson this week, a really good player. Hopefully she's just a little bit better heading back home to Chicago. You've got, I believe, a daughter at University of Colorado, and hopefully we'll see you back on court at Boulder Pickleball soon.
We got a question. We get, obviously, questions. You can submit your questions. You can send them to me at 4.0 Pro on Instagram or the website 402p.com. You can find us to submit a question. We got one the other day that said, tips for fourth shot when the other team hits a good third. And what was so ironic about this is that prior to doing last week's show, which was on kind of the tournament debrief, we were going to do a show on fourths. That was going to be the show. And it's, I got to say, dude, it's one of the least thought about, to me, least thought about, least trained, least, you know, highlighted. You know, the third gets all the press.
No, this is the Rodney Dangerfield of pickleball shots.
Right.
It just doesn't get the respect it deserves.
It really, it's true. It's because even your fifth gets more than the fourth, but the fourth has some really key elements that we're going to cover today. Can you talk a bit about the fourth? Because I think you just went through a camp or something last week where it was a big point of discussion.
Yeah, we actually talked about it a little bit with my MPL squad, a couple of teammates on there. We clearly, right away, have to realize when we're talking about the fourth shot, that we're the returning team. And quite likely, you are the returner because the opponents should be hitting the next ball, their third, back in your direction. So we've got to visualize what's going to transpire before the opponents even serve. What are some of my priorities here? And then mechanically, how do I need to execute the footwork and the shot itself?
Right. So ideally, you're doing that high, deep, and down the middle return that we've talked about on this show a lot. And you've hit the tee, if you will. But if not, you've got to adapt to that, right?
Well, I like to say we need to consider optimal hang time and depth and spin on this ball based on your respective skills and fleet of foot and how fast do you want to run and what are the strengths and weaknesses of our opponents? Have my partner and I decided we're going to return to him or her or him or him? Or where are we returning that ball? But regardless, the depth should be deep and the height should be high enough to give us the hang time to get to where I want to get. But it doesn't always work out that way.
Well, this and the next piece of this is something that actually the very first time we ever worked together on pickleball was something that you really burned in my head. It's a lesson that I've passed along countless times since then, which is ideally you've gotten to where you want to be. So you know, you've hit that second shot and you've gotten exactly where you want to be. You're so excited. But if you didn't, if you're on the way to where you want it to be, you have to split step as they're hitting the third ball, no matter where you are. And the logic is so sound on it because you think, well, ideally, I'd like to be over there. But if I'm not, I would rather be balanced, springs loaded, and able to go in any direction as quickly as I can in this situation. I would have loved to have been right over there, but I'm not. So instead of my momentum still going in that direction where they can maybe have the opportunity to pass behind me, I want to be balanced and ready to move. So that split step happening no matter where you are on the court, man, if there's one thing I think someone could take away from almost every episode we do, it's that.
And you've internalized that since our first lesson together beautifully and articulated it great. I can tell that you've shared that with other aspiring players. And here's a little follow-up to that is that if you'd rather be where you want to be and you're not able to get there, you need more hang time. We need to buy ourselves some more time. Now, we're talking about this, you know, in between the second and the fourth, but when we're dinking, if you get pulled wide, you need to buy yourself some time to get back in position. But to your point, we need to split step when the ball is on our opponent's paddle, no matter where we are. And again, it is a thousandth of a second, brief loading of the springs from which we will move left, right, forward, or back according to wherever it is that they hit the ball. In this particular scenario, I don't even necessarily need to have made it all the way to the kitchen line before they hit their third, because I love split stepping. I don't mind being two or three steps away from the non-volley zone line when the ball's on their paddle. I do my very brief split step, analyze where they hit the ball, and now I've saved myself a little bit of forward momentum, and my footwork is crisp enough that I can hit the effective fourth shot volley with that little bit of step in. And coming from a tennis background, I actually don't mind saving myself a little bit of room to step into my first volley. So I think some players make too much of an effort to get to the non-volley zone and completely settle. And if there's no split step, then they're too settled. You know, they're no longer in an athletic position. And I would rather make my split step 2 or 3 feet away from the non-volley zone and move athletically into my fourth.
So this gets us to the point now where your opponents are now hitting their third. We are where we are. And now your opponents are hitting their third. And we're going to go over three scenarios here. Green light, yellow light, red light. Green light being, this is a takeable ball. This is a ball that you can actually get something on. It's probably some sort of high third. So am I correct in saying, though, that a green light ball, as I'm hitting my fourth, is a, I've got options. I can hit out on this one.
Yes. You're describing it right.
This is a ball above the net that I can do something with, right?
Correct. To belabor the point, means the other guys should be in the red zone.
Right. And they're in full defense. Yeah, they're in full defensive mode, and we're in full offensive mode.
These are the two different ways.
Right. So something I thought was really interesting about this, I'm probably a person that might, by default, find the space first and the feet second versus finding the feet first and the space second. You know what I'm saying? On a small pickleball court, I might look and say, ooh, I can hit this fourth shot into this hole. But what we've talked about in the past is sometimes that hole's not a hole. Sometimes it's one step away and there's a paddle there and it looked like it was an opportunity, but it's not. Are you an advocate of hit it at their feet most of the time or hit it where they ain't, open space?
I'm processing both almost simultaneously, but if you ask me to do so chronologically, I come from the school of hit the ball vertically, depth-wise, toward the feet of my opponents first and the open space second.
Okay. So the primary idea is I'm at the very least keeping them back. I'm not giving them an opportunity. What I see sometimes, Scott, is that some people actually want to do kind of a drop volley in this spot where they have sort of an easy drop volley, but then it gives their opponents a chance to come up to the net, which is the literal opposite of what we're trying to do right now, which is to keep them back. So you'd just as soon keep them by the baseline and fire a ball at their feet.
Yeah, that drop volley inclination will have a home in a future show. you know, when we'll talk about going off script. But the script here in this particular situation, they've given us a green light by getting the ball up a little bit with their third. My number one priority is hit the ball at their feet, wherever the heck their feet are. And their feet are quite likely further back in the court. And then from there, I'm going to try to find some open space. But even if I don't find open space, if I hit the ball at their feet, then things are likely to remain in our favor the rest of the rally.
Right. And I think we have to watch out for, especially like if you came from tennis, like we both did, trying to just hit these crazy angles off court and, you know, looking for that open space, because I can't tell you the amount of times either I have seen or I have done just ripping a ball into the net, you know, as quickly as humanly possible, or hitting it wide, just because it's a very small pickleball court we're on.
I can tell you how many times I did it. In my first 6 months of playing pickleball, I took this ball, I angled it off for a winner, and it landed 4 inches wide 779 times.
Right. That's exactly right.
These records.
Yes. The next scenario would be they've hit a pretty decent third, something that they can probably move mid-transition zone on. And we've got sort of an either or, we've got a yellow light. I would say, Scott, arguably this ball, this particular fourth, is one of the hardest shots in pickleball to master. This is a roll volley. So you're probably below the net as you start this stroke. You've got to roll up on the ball. Again, you're trying to keep them back. So the ball is still intended to go at their feet, but now you've got to roll this thing with some loft. It's very easy for that ball to get a little high and then see a plastic pickleball coming at you at a million miles an hour a millisecond later, or to snap the top of the net, and obviously that's the end of the point. So that roll volley, this is one of the things that beyond the strategy that we very often talk about, this is one of those shots that requires a fair bit of drilling to really learn. And I think we'll probably talk about some drills we can do on this even particular ball at the end of this show. So again, if I'm reading this correctly, we're trying to keep them back because that's the goal, is to keep them off of that line. We have a much better chance of winning. I'm trying to roll this thing from below the net to their feet. Am I correct in that assumption? What about the direction?
Yeah, again, this is why in order of process, I like to consider hit the ball at their feet, wherever the heck their feet are. And I'll just take issue with your word choice a tad in that at this level, I don't want to try to keep them back. Because if I try to keep them back, I may get that ball up waist high to one of the players in the transition zone. And the opponents I play against, that's a bad idea. Like you, if I play against you and I try to keep you back and you get a waist high forehand.
Yeah.
Then that's not going to work out well for us. Right. I need to hit the ball at your feet, wherever the heck your feet are. Now, the skill set that I need for that is the roll volley off the forehand or the backhand side, which we may or may not get into the deep mechanics of that shot. But if we could start with hit the ball at their feet, that's going to be a lot better here than trying to keep them back, which is going to work out poorly.
We probably need to do a full roll volley episode now that I think about it.
That's probably a better idea for this show.
Because it is a complicated shot, and I've seen it taught 10 different ways, but ultimately the goal is to keep the thing with some topspin and hit towards their opponent's feet. That's the ultimate goal. So
agreed.
This is something that you talked about when we did a show on volleys, which I'd never heard this term before, but it totally makes sense. Let's say they've hit a great third and now we're just living to fight another day. You talked about the surrender volley. This is a red light. This means we can't get any offense on the ball they've just hit. It's too good. So now you have to say, all right, you know, well done. You've done what you meant to do. We are now in the ritual four-person kitchen exchange. Let's talk a bit about that as a strategy and kind of where you land on it.
You just did a really great job of processing the situation that you described as good for them. They've hit the most effective third they can hit. And again, if I try to keep them back, that's not going to work out well. If I try to roll volley into the middle of the court, it's not going to work out well. I've decided this third was just too good, and I'm going to surrender the high ground, and I'm going to drop this ball into the kitchen, perhaps toward the weaker player or their weaker wing, but I'm perfectly fine having it land in what I like to say is the 140 square feet of safe space on the other side, and agree. Good for you guys. You have neutralized the rally, and now we're going to show you our four-person ritual kitchen exchange skills.
Right. So what's interesting about this, I think, is this is when you watch the pros play. It's something that I think is a big difference between what happens with even a lot of the 4-point somethings is they try to keep fighting. They're trying to still stay in it. They're still trying to stay offensive, where the pro mindset is, oh yeah, they've gotten it. They did what they intended. I now get to switch the strategy into this dinking mode instead of the transition mode that we were in before. So I think that's probably a lesson we all need to learn. I think that the recognition of that ball, of that good third, is something that gets clearer and clearer as you work your way up in the fours. When you start getting into the fives, I think you recognize those shots and you say, all right, I'm not going to keep fighting this. It's too good. It's out of my reach. It's going to drop. We in agreement, my partner and I need to go, okay, now we're switching into net strategy mode instead of keeping them back, and maybe we can get away with this point mode.
Exactly. And you're right that the pros make this calculation rather quickly and don't try to force it. We're now going to demonstrate our kitchen skills versus you guys. Good for you. It's why, on the other side of things, I don't always try for perfect thirds, because this just doesn't happen regularly enough. But when we're in receipt of a perfect third, don't try to fight.
Right.
Just agree to the neutral scenario and duke it out in a kitchen exchange.
We've often talked about how there's a hidden point in pickleball. And the first point as the serving team is just getting to neutralize the point. It's just getting to the kitchen. If you can win that point, you've got a much better chance of actually winning the rally and actually winning a real point. It's the hidden point of pickleball. And in this scenario, you've lost that point as the other team. You say, all right, I'm going to relinquish this one. There's something I think that happens a lot, especially tournament-wise. It just happened to me a couple weeks ago, is that a team will recognize maybe one of the players on your side can't handle drives really well, or that somebody on their side just has a killer drive and they want to figure out a way to set it up as much as possible. And I'm not sure how much we've talked about the shake and bake on this show. Not a ton, but that is the idea, which is they've served, there's a return. That third ball is going to be a drive, ideally from whoever has the best drive on their team. That other teammate is going to prowl and watch for some sort of pop-up or an attackable fourth. And man, it can be a real momentum shift in the middle of a game when someone says, we're not winning these four-person ritual kitchen exchanges. Let's go for a few shake and bakes and see how this thing goes. If it goes well, you got to respond to that. I got to be honest, I'm not sure if I've ever discussed, well, how do we fight that? What's the move other than going to the alleys, sort of forcing to go to the alleys and trying to keep the ball out of the middle where they can whack it. So let's talk a bit about, Scott, about the anti-shake and bake.
It may or may not surprise you, Mike, that I actually like to bait the shake and bake. Teams, you know, they tip their hand from time to time that, yeah, we're winning the four-person ritual kitchen exchanges. They're probably going to try to exploit the shake and bake approach. And as the returner, before the serve even begins, I'm visualizing, you know, if I return to player A, they are likely to drive it back at me. And player B is pretty frisky over there. I know where they're probably going to go. So before the rally starts, I'm fully visualizing, if I get to hit this fourth ball, I'm going behind player B. They're going to collapse to the middle. They're looking for me to try to keep their partner back, and I'm having none of it. I've completely visualized this scenario before the rally begins. Please hit the third ball in my direction so I can hit a mediocre volley behind you. And it works out 80% of the time for me.
You know, last weekend, you were in Texas for the NPL event, the third Senior Pro Tour event. And one of the matches got, you were on center court. And I'm not sure if you've watched that entire thing yourself or not, but they kept talking about how clever you were with your shot selection. So you really are one of the mad scientists, I think, in pickleball, in a way that you can articulate some of these things before the rally even starts. So that's a high five in your direction, Scott.
Thanks. It's hard, you know, to do on the fly, but it is one of those things during a timeout that I may discuss with my partner. What do we think they're going to do coming out of this timeout? And sometimes we've decided they're going to try to shake and bake. So, you know, it's not like I'm figuring this all out on the fly. Sometimes I need a minute or so in a timeout to strategize. But, you know, we've talked about on this show over and over and over again, the value of pre-serve visualization. And usually it's on the serving side. But today's show is about the returners.
Right.
So we get the same amount of time that they do to visualize, how do I want this rally to go? So how about if I return to player A, they hit their third in my direction, I can anticipate that player B is going to crash to the middle. All I got to do is hit a volley where they're not.
Do we change anything with, and this is not this show, but I'm going to use division and cut it in half, for the second shot, if you know you're getting shook and book too much, can you alter your return strategy to the baker? Or do they just typically shake and bake themselves then at that point?
No, I mean, that's exactly what I would do. Unless you've got opponents with equal skills, one of them is likely the better shaker and the other the better baker. So flip it up on them.
Yeah.
You know, I do that in mixed. I've shared on this show that we will frequently return deep to the guy because we're a little bit more concerned with his ability to impact us with his fifth.
Right.
We don't really mind if he drives from 26 feet away. We've made the calculation that his partner is less effective in the midcourt. She may even be the better third shot dropper. So how about if we tease the guy? You know, we know you're going to drive, so just drive. And in this case, we don't really expect that she's going to be looking for the shake and bake as much as the other way around. And then, you know, we just hit the ball toward the feet of the players. We've arrived at the kitchen and we should hold the high ground.
So if we were to, well, let's just to wrap the shake and bake up, the baker, the guy who's looking to poach that last ball and put it away, we want to hit behind him. We want to, because he's going to crash middle almost every single time. He's going to crash where he is. So we're going to try to hit in the alley behind him. Let's talk about drilling this. You're drilling the whole thing. I want to drill these fourths in general. We've got two people. You've got a drilling partner. The green light, these are higher balls. So you'd have your partner, your drilling partner, one person's at the net, one person's at the baseline. They hit in sort of a somewhat intentional high third. Your move is then to hit it deep and to their feet. And if you can get that into a rhythm, they are able to practice their defensive position. And maybe you need multiple balls for this, because if you hit a great ball at their feet, they're maybe not going to hit that beautiful third again. So you might have to work basket of balls for this one. But I think that's a great way to do it. And then conversely, I think you can hit some great drops and just work on your surrender volley, just keeping in the kitchen. But the tougher one is probably that transition zone one, but maybe the easiest one to practice, because you can practice your roll volleys back to them in the transition zone. They can hit a decent third from that.
And when I'm visualizing drilling this, to take it back to the top of the show, what we led with here is I've got to focus on a really productive and proactive split step a few feet away from the non-volley zone. When the ball is on my opponent's paddle, make that split step, read the ball off my opponent's paddle, and choose the appropriate response, whether that ball is up in my green or down in my red. I've got to choose the appropriate ball, and the split step is the physical and the mental pause that I need to be able to execute that.
Love it. Well, folks, thank you as always. I want to just say something really quick. We're on a fairly decent pace in the next maybe 6 weeks or so to have 100,000 downloads for this little podcast we're doing. So very exciting, everybody. Very exciting, Scott. As always, please leave us a rating and review on whatever platform you choose to listen to us on. 402p.com. You want a carbon paddle and get 10% off. 402p.com/CRBN. You can also use the promo code 402p at checkout, and at 4.02 pro with underscores. on Instagram. Follow Boulder Pickleball with Mr. Scott Fliegelman there. If you have a little summer vacation time planned, get yourself out to Boulder and train with the man himself. You are rock stars. Thanks for hanging out with us. As always, go enjoy some time on the court, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.